are you reeling in the year?
Good morning, Saskatchewan. Not Evan Bray, Brent Loukes filling in for Evan. He'll be back in the chair tomorrow. Boy, what an interesting morning we have got ahead of us here. Of course, the attention of the world on what occurred in Iran over the weekend, what kind of a response we may or may not see from Iran following this very surprising, I think. I'm not saying we should be surprised that it happened, but when you saw Donald Trump just days ago saying he was going to give it 2 weeks before he made up his mind as to whether or not they would launch any kind of military action against Iran, and then we saw Saturday night and the aftermath Sunday morning of this military intervention, I guess we could say, into Iran. We're going to talk a whole lot about that through the course of the morning. Did you get enough rain on the weekend? Some areas got too much rain. Some areas got, I guess, enough, if there ever is enough. Other areas were maybe hoping for rain, didn't maybe get so much, but lots of good precipitation. Temperatures over the next while, we're going to stay below normal in Saskatchewan for a couple of days, but then warmer temperatures on the way midweek, and maybe some more precipitation as well. So much on the show that we're going to be talking about here. What's the state of the hotel industry in Saskatchewan? We know that it's been struggling for a number of years, certainly following the years of the pandemic. But just anecdotally, we're starting to hear more and more stories about sold out weekends, difficulty finding hotel rooms. Jim Bentz with Hospitality Saskatchewan will share the latest information on that industry coming up just after nine. Also on the way this morning, Ryan Brook, one of our favorite guests over the course of the years. Ryan's a prof at the University of Saskatchewan and has done a lot of research on everything from wild hogs to moose. He's going to join us after 10 today to talk about the urban wildlife cameras that they've got in place around a number of locations around Saskatoon, and talk about some of the creatures that they've been seeing. How about them riders, huh? Wow. You know, I know there was a lot of penalties in that game Friday night, and it wasn't the most maybe professional-looking football game, but man, you couldn't ask for a more exciting finish for the Riders. Big win over Toronto. Riders go 3-0. Getting ready to host BC coming up Saturday at Mosaic. What else have we got on the program today on the Evan Bray Show? Well, the guy that found the Saskatchewan car in the Alberta Lake up in the Rockies. Yeah, we were all talking about this story here a few weeks ago. We've tracked down Alan Keller. He's that Calgary diver, and we're going to see if there's anything new they can add to that story. And we'll also tell you about a little bit of research we've done here at News Talk Radio, trying to track down the origin of that car. Like, it's about an 85-year-old, almost 100-year-old vehicle. So more on that coming up this morning. We're going to do some storm chasing with Saskatchewan storm chaser Ricky Forbes. We'll get into that. And an interesting story from a Alberta company that has developed a system to save properties from wildfire. The system is called Rufus. We'll get the story on that after 11 o'clock this morning. There's some interesting space news coming out of South America. We'll be getting details on that from the University of Regina Associate Professor of Astronomy, Samantha Lawler. Yeah, it's a busy Monday. Glad you're with me. Brent Loukes filling in on the Evan Bray Show. You're listening to 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Filling in, Evan Bray Show. In just a couple of minutes here, we're going to be speaking with John Allen. John is the former Canadian ambassador to Israel and a senior fellow with the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy. Of course, we'll be talking about the American attack on Iran this weekend. Saturday night, it was Donald Trump.
A short time ago, the U.S. military carried out massive precision strikes on the three key nuclear facilities in the Iranian regime, Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan. Everybody heard those names for years as they built this horribly destructive enterprise. Our objective was the destruction of Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity and a stop to the nuclear threat posed by the world's number one state sponsor of terror. Tonight, I can report to the world that the strikes were a spectacular military success. Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated. Iran, the bully of the Middle East, must now make peace. If they do not, future attacks will be far greater and a lot easier. For 40 years, Iran has been saying death to America, death to Israel. They have been killing our people, blowing off their arms, blowing off their legs with roadside bombs. That was their specialty. We lost over 1,000 people, and hundreds of thousands throughout the Middle East and around the world have died as a direct result of their hate. In particular, so many were killed by their general, Qasem Soleimani. I decided a long time ago that I would not let this happen. It will not continue. I want to thank and congratulate Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. We worked as a team like perhaps no team has ever worked before. And we've gone a long way to erasing this horrible threat to Israel. I want to thank the Israeli military for the wonderful job they've done. And most importantly, I want to congratulate the great American patriots who flew those magnificent machines tonight and all of the United States military on an operation the likes of which the world has not seen in many, many decades. Hopefully, we will no longer need their services in this capacity. I hope that's so. I also want to congratulate the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Rosenkane, spectacular general, and all of the brilliant military minds involved in this attack. With all of that being said, this cannot continue. There will be either peace or there will be tragedy for Iran far greater than we have witnessed over the last 8 days. Remember, there are many targets left. Tonight's was the most difficult of them all, by far, and perhaps the most lethal. But if peace does not come quickly, we will go after those other targets with precision, speed, and skill. Most of them can be taken out in a matter of minutes. There's no military in the world that could have done what we did tonight, not even close. There has never been a military that could do what took place just a little while ago. And I want to just thank everybody, and in particular, God, I want to just say we love you, God, and we love our great military. Protect them. God bless the Middle East. God bless Israel, and God bless America. Thank you very much. Thank you.
U.S. President Donald Trump, with Saturday night's announcement of the military strike on those three nuclear sites in Iran. So, what's next? John Allen joins me now. John is the former Canadian ambassador to Israel. John's a senior fellow with the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy as well at the University of Toronto. Thank you for your time this morning, John.
Good morning.
So I'm guessing you, like everybody else in the world, wakes up this morning seeing what's happened since the American military action in Iran. What do you think is going to happen in the coming days or weeks ahead here?
Well, very hard to predict, Brent, obviously. The tit-for-tat continues between Iran and Israel as we speak. Donald Trump went from saying that the regime change was not in the cards to, over the weekend, once again talking about regime change, which would be unfortunate, I think. I just saw some reports that Israel is now sending signals to Iran that they would hope that this back and forth could come to an end. I think that would be the best outcome. There are alternatives. Iran can do everything from moving very quickly to try and build a bomb with what they have left, to hitting American sites in the region, to hitting the Gulf states and their oil facilities, to mining the Strait of Hormuz, and all the way to terrorism, asymmetrical warfare. And they've got many choices, but none of them are particularly good for Iran.
Absolutely. Is this a situation, in your mind, do you think, that's ever going to be resolved? Are we ever going to see true peace in the Middle East?
Well, I think true peace in the Middle East is going to come with new leadership. Obviously, Iran desperately needs a different kind of leadership. The Shah wasn't the perfect leader by any stretch, but the Ayatollahs have brought death and brutality within Iran, and they've brought death and destruction abroad. I think Israel desperately needs new leadership as well. This is a big success for Prime Minister Netanyahu, but he still has a war 19 months old in Gaza. The Palestinians need new leadership. So it's a generalized problem, dictators in the Middle East. We've got some hope in Lebanon and Syria right now, but it really depends on who's running the country and whether or not they want a dictatorship or some different, more democratic form of government.
When we think back to those years you alluded to, you were talking about the Shah and, you know, the way Iran operated. And it's easy to look back. You see photographs from the 60s and the 70s of a very Western look for a lot of people living in Iran at the time. But now, of course, we've seen so many years under the Ayatollah, the whole religious governance that we see happening there. Is that something that's going to be easily replaced, do you think?
Well, that's why I alluded to concerns about regime change. We've seen some very, very unfortunate examples of efforts to force regime change in Iraq and Libya and in Yemen, just to name a few. And in Iran, it is absolutely unclear what might replace the Ayatollah and this current regime if it were removed. There is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps that could take over. There are various other groups in play. The country could disintegrate into a kind of civil war. So one has to be careful about regime change. On the other hand, of course, Iranian Canadians and Iranians around the world would like nothing more than to see a new government, perhaps not one like the Shah, but one that was moderate and could focus on the interests of the Iranian people, the economy, as opposed to enrichment of uranium and the possibility of a nuclear bomb.
You know, and that's something that I have a hard time getting my head around. I just don't understand how a country would develop a nuclear bomb and actually use it on another country. This is what we hear so much coming out of Iran, is that if they got the bomb, they would destroy Israel. Why would anyone think that would be a way to move ahead with whatever your beliefs may be? Is this all tied to their religion then?
I really don't think, even if they got the bomb, and I don't think they were quite as close as Donald Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu would have you believe, even if they did get it, they would not be using it, because they would know, just as North Korea would know, that they would be obliterated if they used that. India has the bomb. Pakistan has the bomb. Israel has the bomb. The P5, you know, all have the bomb. Nobody, Russia, of course, has the bomb. People have it and don't want to give it up because they want to protect themselves and they want to tell the world, don't come at me. You can imagine that the Ukrainians right now are a little bit unhappy about the fact that they gave up their nuclear program. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily that Iran wanted to obliterate Israel. They said it. They said they wanted to obliterate the United States, both highly unlikely. But they wanted to be close enough so that nobody was going to do what Donald Trump did and what Israel's been doing. And that's what they're concerned about.
John Allen, it's always a pleasure getting your perspective. John, former Canadian ambassador to Israel, senior fellow with the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy. And just like you, John, the rest of us, the rest of the world just sits and waits and watches to see what potentially might come next. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks.
John Allen joining us on the Evan Bray Show. Brent Loukes filling in. You know, some other aspects to that mission that the American B-2 bombers went on. It's amazing the technology and what they're able to put together. In all, that mission involved 125 aircraft, 75 different bombs and missiles were launched, were deployed. The B-2 bombers carried two of these bunker buster bombs. Each of those bombs weighs 30,000 pounds. These are the only planes in the world that could carry them. Seven planes, seven bombers on a round-trip mission that covered 37 hours. Each plane has a crew of two pilots. And yes, they have a toilet, they have a refrigerator, and they have a cot on each of those planes. Refueling five different times over the course of that round-trip mission to Iran. Lots of talk on it. Anything on your mind this morning? We'd love to hear from you. You can call, you can text 1-877-332-TALK, 1-877-332-8255. The Evan Bray Show on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.